and she was kind of overweight, and none of the boys really liked her. And this young girl, this 15-year-old girl, she's a very pretty young lady. She's a beautiful girl. And her mom is living through her daughter. It's called vicarious living. She's trying to live through her daughter what she never had herself. That's so sad. That's so sad. And so her daughter is pretty enough to have any guy she wants. For what? So that her heart can be broken once, twice, three times. I oftentimes talk about the sticky note. How many times can you take a sticky note and stick it to something before it will no longer stick? How long can I do this? And eventually, it won't stick. Did you know that neuroscientists tell us that when you begin over and over again to have these relationships like our young people are now, these very casual relationships, that the neurotransmitters in the brain, that when it comes to actually being able to keep a commitment with somebody, by the time they finally do get married, they find it very, very difficult to do so because they have practiced breaking up. They have practiced divorce. That they cannot stay glued and stuck to anyone. So putting one of these on doesn't mean a whole lot. So how do I train my children, my older teenagers? I train them with very, very difficult things like this. I talk to my children. I show them the finish line. I say, listen, I want you to understand that you're pretty enough. Did you see my family earlier? Did you see any ugly people in that picture? Certainly not me. They're all handsome and pretty and so forth. But I want my children to go for the gold medal. Do you know of any Olympic athlete who's training for the Olympics who says, I am going for the bronze? That's what I'm going for. I am going to train for the bronze. That's ridiculous. You're going to spend all that time and effort getting up at 4 o'clock every morning training, you know, drinking raw eggs, you know, for the protein and for the... You can't eat French fries and you can't... You go to birthday parties and you can't eat these gymnasts, these girls, you know, and they got to maintain their figure, these decathletes. You know, all that training and you're going for the bronze. What are they shooting for? What? The gold! They're going for the gold! I want my children to go for the gold. And so I show them what the gold medal looks like. I showed my daughter, Katie, what it was going to look like when she was little, 5 years old. You know, we know of Cinderella. We know of Sleeping Beauty. You know, your knight in shining armor. And I wanted my girls to understand that they can wait until God brings that young man in their life. I was sharing with Pastor Jerry over lunch that there was a young man that came into our church and he was 16 years of age and his mother and father were not in the picture and he had no one. And so I kind of adopted him in and let him start kind of hanging out with our family. And I would take him with me to the rest homes and take him with me to the hospitals and he'd run errands with me and so forth and even hung out with us. We have a 4th of July fireworks display in our county. We took him to the 4th of July one year, took him to the Christmas parade with us and just tried to train and help this young man. And little did I know that young man would become my son-in-law. I was mentoring my son, and that was Josh in the picture. So when Katie came to me, I was a little bit surprised because I'm thick-headed. Katie came to me and she said, "Hey, Dad," she said, well, actually she didn't, her mother did. She said, "Kevin, have you noticed that how Josh and Katie are acting around each other?" And I'm like, "No, they're acting around each other? What are they doing?" She said, "Well, I really think there's something between them. They like each other." Well, we had gone to Josh's Marine graduation down in Parris Island, South Carolina, watched him graduate. He'd asked me to kind of come and represent his dad. And so we did. And so we were down there for 2 days. And so my wife told me that the night of the first day. And so the next day, I started watching. And I saw it. You know, ladies, you are so intuitively smart. You can see things that we cannot see as men. We are black and white. You see the gray. You really do. Amen, men. These ladies can, I mean, they're our suitable helpers. We're dumb. The women can see it. So I'm like, oh, okay. And so then I asked Josh, I said, what's your intentions? What's your intentions? You ought to ask a young man that who wants to see your daughter. What's your intentions? If he says, hey, I just want to go out and have dinner and go to the movies. Okay, great. What time's the movie over? 8:30? Okay, have her home by 9. Well, I thought her curfew was 11. See, that's the problem. See, our young people, they go out for dinner and a movie. Most movies last 90 minutes. They go to the 7 o'clock movie. It's over at 8:30. Curfew is at 11. What do they do for the next 2.5 hours? You tell me. We have a promiscuity problem because they begin to spend time with each other. I usually use the hand. I talk about this with my children. You know, the children, the young people, a man and a young lady and a young man, they enjoy each other. They come together and they like it. They're good looking. They're attracted to each other. They have things in common, so they enjoy being together. They have the big things in common, and they have the little things in common. What's the only two fingers that aren't together? The ring finger. And we're told, we're telling them, don't come together in this way. You know what I mean by come together and the way I'm speaking of this with our children in the room. Don't come together, you understand, until you're married. But go ahead and spend time together. Have you ever tried to do this, what I'm doing? Did you know that if I were to continue to talk to you for the next 5 minutes and try to keep my hands like this, you know what would happen to my two ring fingers eventually? What's going to happen? They're going to touch. God designed us that way. We are awakening love too soon. So I have these conversations with my teenagers to show them the gold, what they're going for, what I want them to see for their lives. I can give them a lot of rules and regulations for right now. Do this, keep your room clean, do this, don't backtalk me, don't do da 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 da. Or I can show them the gold. Do you think an Olympic athlete, if you told them all that you're going to do is get up every morning at 4 o'clock and you went through all the stuff that you had to explain about how bad it was going to be, all the rules and the things that they had, you can't eat fried chicken and you can't eat hamburgers. But if you show them the gold, they wake up every morning thinking about that gold medal, standing up there on that platform while they're playing our national anthem. That's what you keep in their mind. We've got to show our children the gold medal. We show them what it is that we're seeking for them and we want for them. I have no greater joy than to hear that my children are walking in the truth. That's my greatest joy. It's greater than if our church becomes a church of 1,000 people, and I think within the next 5 years we probably will. I'm not about that anymore. I did all that. Six-figure living and all that. God has given me children and my wife children, and they're the most wonderful, valuable asset that I have. And I did not spend the time that I needed to with my children. And by the grace of God, God has helped them and helped us. Let me say this to jump off your question for a moment. What if you've blown it? What if you've blown it with your kids? What if they've not turned out like you wanted them to turn out? Is it too late? Are they still breathing? It's not too late. My dad and I, my dad is 6'7". He's an inch taller than me. He's a big guy. I love my dad so very much, but I'm afraid of my dad. You say, why are you afraid of my dad? Because he's my dad. I can talk to my dad about anything. The problem I had with my dad was talking to him about the things of God, because I really believe that my father probably wasn't a believer. So I struggled with that. And my dad never really trained and raised me. His dad, my grandfather, did spend a lot of time helping me, and he was a godly man. And so my spiritual heritage can be traced back to my grandfather, by and large. And there was another man in the church who was a pastor that spent some time with me. But I say that to say this. My dad, about 10 years ago, went through a process of basically looking at his life and seeing, you know, what was important in life. And one of the things that started to come to the forefront was our relationship. And as time went along, this has been about, I guess, about 7 years ago, as we started the rite of passage, one of the things I told you was that we go through our spiritual heritage and our family heritage. And so Katie, our oldest daughter, I said, honey, just go to your grandfather and just ask him to tell you about his family, because, you know, that's part of this and you need to go do that. So she does, and it was interesting. I learned a lot of things through her, through Katie, from my dad. So I went to my dad and I said, Dad, why didn't you ever tell me about any of this? I mean, I didn't know any of this stuff about his dad and his dad's dad and all this other stuff. And he said, in fact, I didn't know our family was from South Carolina. Our family was from Greenville, South Carolina. The Browns were from Greenville, South Carolina. I had no idea. But see, my dad and I, we just didn't have that relationship. My dad worked for Lowe's Companies. You know Lowe's Home Improvement Warehouse? My dad was gone all the time. He worked all the time. And when he was home, he was involved in all these clubs and these things. He was part of the Elks Lodge, and he was like the grand potentate or whatever that thing is, the big poobah down there. And, you know, he played golf, and he did hunting, and he was gone with all of his buddies fishing all the time. And, you know, I mean, I never went fishing with my dad when I was a kid. The only in North Carolina. We did some pier fishing in South Carolina. We would go to the beach from time to time, but we just never had time. We never did anything. And so we go through this process of rite of passage, and he said, well, son, if you want to see where you're from, I'll take you sometime. I said, well, Dad, I'd love to. So he calls me up on a Monday morning. He says, what are you doing Friday? And I said, well, I'm just working. He said, can you get off? And I said, I don't know, probably. What do you want to do? And he said, I want to take you to Greenville, South Carolina. I'm like, Greenville? And I was like, oh, yeah, that's where we're from. He says, yeah, I want to show you where your great-grandfather lived. I'm like, okay. I was almost nervous being with my dad. Anybody know what I'm feeling? I was almost nervous being with my dad. I'm like, I don't know if I want to ride in the car with him for 3.5 hours. What are we going to talk about? So we get in the car and we go ride 3.5 hours. It's amazing. We had all kinds of things to talk about. I was so nervous. I was like, I had butterflies, like before I'm taking a test or something. And we go drive down to South Carolina, and I'll never forget it. We pull up at an auto zone, one of these car parts stores, and we get out, and Dad, he had a get up in his get along. Let's just say that he starts walking up beside. I said, "Hey, wait up!" And he's just taking off, and he says, "It's right up here around this curve." And so he gets a little bit ahead of me, and he goes around this curve, and then as I come, and there he's standing. He's just standing there. And he's got his mouth hanging out. I said, I call him Pop. I said, I almost ran into him. I was like, whoa, Pop, what? He goes, there it is. It's still there. The old house. He said, come on. He went around the house and started going down here. He goes, come here. Hang on. Woo! It's still down there. He said, you see that little stream down there? We used to go down there and catch tadpoles. I'm like, okay. I'd never seen my dad like this. I was like, this is crazy. I took out my phone and started taping it. I was like, he's running around like I'd never. He's like he's 8 years old. And he's telling me all these stories about him remembering being down there at his granddad's when we came up around the other side of the house and had a little porch. And he talked about how they would sit out there on the porch and eat moon pies and drink RC Colas. This is old stuff. And just listening to my dad. And he didn't know it, but I was wiping tears from my face because I'd never seen my dad like that before. He was giddy. And so I said, "Dad, thanks for sharing all this with me." And I took pictures, and I will never forget that day as long as I live. You say, "Why do you tell that story?" Because it's never too late. It's never too late. I'm trying to teach and train my kids now, but my dad is 66 years old. His health is not great. He's having neck problems. He's had some surgery on his neck. He's got neuropathy in his feet. He can't hardly feel his legs below his knees. He scrapes himself on something and he starts bleeding. He can't feel it. He doesn't even know he's bleeding. He cut himself on a lawnmower blade a while back and had blood in his shoes. He thought he'd stepped in mud and it was his own blood that he was tracking around. And so, you know, it's just one of those things that happens as people get older and things. But you know what? My dad's being my father now. My dad's being my dad. My dad and I, our relationship has grown the most in the last 10 years from the time he was 56 to now he's 66. And from the time that I was 36, I'm 46. For almost 36 years, I didn't know what it was really like to have a father like I have now. It's never too late for anyone in this room. If you have older children that no longer live here or that you're concerned about, it's never too late for you to begin or even for them. How do we teach and train our kids, whether it be teenagers or whether it be, it's just that relationship. Me just riding in that car with my dad, just talking. It really all comes back to the relationship. I said it in the first session, rules without relationship leads to rebellion. Rules without relationship leads to rebellion. It's about the relationship. And do you know how children spell love? T-I-M-E. Huh? Children spell love time. People tell me all the time, "Well, I give them quality time." Quality. They want quality and quantity time. They want both. They want you. If they had a choice between the stuff that you can buy them by working those extra hours or you, they'll take you every time. They want you. They want daddy. They want mama. They just want to talk, ride in a car with you, go fishing with you, eat an ice cream cone at Sonic with you, just spending time with you, going to Lowe's and buying some shovels, just spending time with you. That's what they want, and that's what they need, and that's how we impart the faith. That's how we show them the gold medal. When we sit down, lie down, rise up, and walk along the way, it's a relationship. That's pouring into them. And for so many of us, what it's really going to come down to, because of the time of our schedules, is that's going to happen at night. It's going to happen between about 6 o'clock, and depending on the ages of your kids, maybe as late as midnight. For my two teenage girls, they are wide open at about 10 o'clock at night. I am dragging. I can barely go. I've been up so long. And they're night owls. Anybody know what I'm talking about? They're just revved up and ready to go and just cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha. Listen, I have asked God to help give me strength to survive these years, because they need me to listen to them. To go sit in their room on the edge of their bed and let them chatter, chatter away. To listen to them tell the same story three different ways. I'm like, enough already. I mean, I've heard this story. But that's just the way they, especially for girls, that's the way they articulate. And so just to listen to them and to, sometimes we'll be up and it's 1 o'clock in the morning. You know, this doesn't happen all the time, but just, you know, it's amazing that they'll say, "Dad, you know, thanks for listening." Have I done anything? I just listen. You know what that means to some? You know what it's like to just let somebody listen to you talk? People come into my office, you know, and I'm sure Pastor Jerry's learned this, the best thing we can do is keep our mouths closed. It's just listen. People get done after, you know, about an hour or so, and they say, "Pastor, you've helped me so much. I've said 15 words. What did they need? Somebody to listen. Our children just want us. They just, whether they be teenagers or young, your two children back here, honey, they're good to go. They're sitting here obedient and listening. They're going to be fine. And by them being, listen, by you guys even being here today and listening, there are things you're going to take away from here, and you can help your mom. You can be there to encourage her and to love her. What's your son's name? Timothy? Yeah? Okay. Timotheus? Yeah, great. You know what Jesus did on the cross for his mama? He said, "Woman, behold thy son. Son, behold thy mother." Those of you that were in the first session, do you remember that Jesus was the oldest of how many? At least six. Why did he not turn his mother over to James? Scholars tell us that Joseph most likely had passed away. We don't know how or why. They weren't there. They didn't believe until after the resurrection. Jesus was not going to turn his mother over to a pagan. So Jesus took care of his mama. While he was